পিঞ্জাবে জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জবে হরি। জয় ওম বিষ্ণুপাদ পরমহংস পরিবিদগচার্য অষ্টথরসত শ্রী শ্রীমদ হিজ ডিভাইন গ্রেস শ্রী ভক্তি বেদান্ত স্বামী শ্রীল প্রভুপাদ কি অনন্তকোটি বৈষ্ণবৃন্দ কি গৌর প্রেমানন্দী। ওম নমো ভগবতে বাসুদেবায়, ওম নমো ভগবতে বাসুদেবায়, ওম নমো ভগবতে বাসুদেবায়। Text 30, Canto 10, Chapter 24, Govardhan Hill. Etan mama matam tata kriyatam yadi rochate ayam go brahma nadrinam mayam cha dayato makai etam etan mama matam tata kriyatam yadi rochate ayam go brahmanadrinam mayam cha dayato makaha. Etan mama matam tata kriyatam yadi rochate ayanam go brahmanadrinam mayam cha dayato makaha. Etan mama matam tata kriyatam rochate ayam go brahmanadrinam mayam cha dayato makaha. Etan mama matam tata kriyatam yadi rochate I am called Brahmanadrinam Mayam cha dayato makha. Kriyatam yadi rochate I am called Brahmanadrinam mayam cha dayato makha. Etam mama matam tata kriyatam yadi rochate ayam go brahmanadrinam mayam cha dayato makaha. Etat this mama, my, matam, idea, tata, oh father, kriyatam, may it be carried out, yadi, if, rochate, it is pleasing, ayam, this, go brahmana adrinam for the cows, brahmanas, and Govardhan Hill. Mayam for me. Cha also. Dayataha cherished. Makaha, sacrifice. Translation, this is my idea, O Father, and you may carry it out if it appeals to you. Such a sacrifice will be very dear to the cows, the brahmanas, and Govardhan Hill, and also to me. Purport. Whatever is pleasing to the brahmanas, the cows, and the Supreme Lord himself is auspicious and beneficial for the entire world. Spiritually blind, quote, modern people do not understand this and instead adopt a, quote, scientific approach to life that is rapidly destroying the entire earth. So I'm going to just take a look at a very short commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami. Everything cooperates. Vishwanath's one sentence, this sacrifice will be dear to me, parentheses, mayam. And Jiva Goswami's Toshini commentary, O Father, if you have affection for me, then do this ceremony. That is the deep meaning of addressing Nanda. Do it if it pleases you. Since such words are suitable for respectable persons, by being polite, he hopes to accomplish the ceremony. This worship of the cows, the brahmanas, and the hill is beneficial for me. Dative case mayam indicates giving benefit. He, Krishna, makes certain that it is not only a reasonable request, but also asks this of Nanda, who should realize that he must do it for Krishna's benefit, as well as understanding it is for his own benefit. That's it, purport or commentary. Sometimes it is said that the Varnashram system is meant for other than the devotees because the devotees are engaged in devotional service, and one who's engaged in devotional service need not follow the principles of Varnashram because it's external, because they're doing internal devotional service. So no need. And one of the many counters to that notion is even in Vrindavan, they observe Varnashram, and other apparently secondary activities, and those apparently secondary activities are observed to achieve the primary activity. That's our, you can say, the dovetail notion. You do something that's worldly, dedicated to the personality of Godhead. This is in our conditioned state. This is not the Brijbasi state. We do something that suits my nature or has something to do with the fact that I have a material body and mind, and so I do those things and dedicate those things to the service of Krishna, for the pleasure of Krishna. The one of the classic examples of that is Brahma, And the word dovetail, at least the first time I encountered it, came with Bhaktisiddhanta's commentary saying, after the whole of the becoming well acquainted with the ocean of truth and having an understanding, at least a preliminary understanding of his eternal rasa with Krishna, which matured and manifested further in course of time, he, Brahma, had an apprehension or a doubt or some uncertainty. It's unspecified, but commentary says Krishna understood his doubt. So Krishna responded, and the doubt goes like this. This realization that's way up there, and now way over here is this duty and tendency, because he was endowed with the Srishti Shakti of the Personality God, that is to say, he had to build the universe. And what can be more complicated than building a universe? Whatever we may do is maybe complicated, but build the universe. You know, let this chemical evolution, let them make one mosquito. Here's the chemicals. Life comes from chemicals. Here's the chemicals. Or, you know, etc. So the conception, that's the reference is being made in the BBT purport here to the modern intellectuals and scientists. In that realm, everything is empiric, meaning all there is matter. Anyway, so what's behind matter? Well, there isn't anything behind matter. There isn't anything behind matter. There is the laws that govern matter and matter, and that's it. And life is matter and the laws governing matter and all of its complexity, etc. So what about us? You know, we're engaged in the bhakti process, and to what extent should we engage? Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said varnashram is external, so chuck it or follow it, or what are we supposed to do? So of course, we're not Brijbasis, but the Brijbasis don't chuck it. These are secondary things, apparently. They're for worldly people, for religious people. There are secondary things that some persons may take to be, that's it. So beyond the objects you can perceive with the senses, the phenomenal realm, there's a higher realm. There's the soul, and there's the transmigration of the soul and the intention to go to the good place, heaven. So you do good things to go to the good place. It's different than just, you know, the empiric phenomenal reality of hedonism. Eat, drink, be merry, and enjoy. So there's higher realms because there's a soul and things that you can do to go to that higher realm. And so religious people will do those things. Even in the beginning stages of bhakti, the prakrita bhakti, bhakta, I was just in Vrindavan. It's really nice being in Vrindavan. And there's this, you know, when it's time for the morning Bhagavatam class, like now here, they have a rope. That's for people that don't have the Madhyama sense of hearing Bhagavatam before the deities and before the spirit, before our founder Acharya and the devotees sitting nicely hearing. The Shravanam Kirtanam process is part of the Madhyama process. And there are persons that just don't have any appreciation of that. They're in the Kanishta platform, and it's Didi Darshan time, so they come in droves, but you have to have a rope to separate the people that aren't Madhyamas and they have no real appreciation. Then they have to have kind of like a traffic cop with a whistle, you know, to when people start doing what people do when they don't have any appreciation for hearing and chanting. They just carry on conversation and lively this and that and the other thing, and like the class just isn't even there. Tell a little story. It's similar, it's same point, just another illustration of the same point. 1974, a few years ago, was our first pilgrimage to Mayapur Vrindavan, the Mayapur Vrindavan Festival. And Achyutananda, then Swami, took a group of us through, you know, what's now well developed. He couldn't have done it today, but back then it was just agricultural fields and agricultural fields and agricultural fields, all the way from the ISKCON Temple to those of you that have been to Mayapur, you know where Kolavachar Shridhar's little bhajan kutir is. It's quite a distance. And so yes, we're just like, you know, through the fields of West Bengal, having kirtan with, you know, maybe at that time it was 150 devotees. That was something like that. Just through fields and fields and fields. There weren't fences. It was just nature and trees and the sky. And, you know, we didn't have, most of us had no, I had no idea, you know, how far, what's the distance between that and Bhaktisiddhanta Road, and the Jagannath Mandir didn't exist then like it does today. So we're just off in these fields. And then he stopped. And he stopped at a little, I don't know what to call it, a stone or cement little stanchion, something like, you know, with that little table that has the flowers, only it was a little taller. And inside, on the top, there were some deities. And we stopped, and we sat down, and he started telling the story of Kolavachar Shridhar, because that's the place. Later, there's, you know, a lot more well-developed. And he was explaining, at this is the place that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur established as the place of Kolavachar Shridhar. As you most likely know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave an instruction to his son to, as he did, the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, further establish the places of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes and his associates. And so Bhaktisiddhanta established that, we'll call it a shrine, little, you know, skinny thing, not big, not very, very simple. And as we were sitting down, you know, it was in the shade of a tree, large tree, banana tree, and a few of them. And from a distance, one pujari saw us sitting there. So he came running and had a large clanging bell and opened the door at the top because there were deities inside. And right in the middle of Achyutananda Swami speaking, he started clanging the bell and offering incense, and like, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. The Kanishta program is the deity, and you see the deity, and don't respect the sannyasi, and don't respect the Shravanam Kirtanam process, because everything is the deity. And the man, you know, Achyutananda Swami at that time spoke Bengali, and he told the man, stop clanging the bell. So he stopped clanging the bell, but he, you know, did his puja. And then he said in English, you know, this is a classic Kanishta mentality. No, Kanishta mentality is, that's bhakti. But everything is in the ritual and in the deity, and not, you know, there's things that it's not and things that it is. So bhakti was being exhibited by this gentleman, but not understanding the madhyama. So we're practicing madhyamas. We're at least being trained to be practicing madhyamas. And the essence is not in the ritual, just like so many nice things. with the worship of the deity, the nice altar, and, you know, everything is on time and clean, and, you know, those standards and procedures that we follow. But the essence is not, it's not that because they're, those standards and procedures are not the essence, we overlook them. We do them because they help us. And that's with, you know, with one of the five most essential activities for awakening: spontaneous devotional service and bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. So here, that's us. That we're the, we're in this Madhyama Adhikar position, training to become more advanced. Should we, to what extent should we involve ourselves with varnashram duties that are external and we can say secondary? That's not the essence. We do them. Now we're taking a look here at the Brijbasis. This is Krishna speaking to Nanda Maharaj. And his language, it's being referenced by Jiva Goswami. The language is very respectful. That's a secondary thing. It's a culture thing. But Krishna is observing it. He's showing by example the culture, the etiquette of respecting elder. In this case, it's his father. And so he's submitting an appeal. And the appeal is, in one sense, it's a secondary thing. So there, this go brahmana adri, worship of cows, worship of brahmanas, worship of a hill. Now, because he's addressing Brijbasis, they don't see cows and brahmanas and a hill as we do, or let's say as Madhyama Adhikaris do. And the purpose of doing those things is not the purpose of a Madhyama Adhikari. But you know, the sacrifice that Nanda was going to do was a yajna for Indra. From a worldly perspective, what's that? That's not, you know, we know from Bhagavad Gita what that is and what it's not. And was the purpose of what Nanda Maharaj was doing this so he could get prosperity and so forth? You know, the consciousness of the Brijbasis is something else. Like the gopis worshipping Katyayani, it's not Durga, a form of Durga, the worldly Durga. It's the internal potent. So they're on another platform, but they do these things, even they're on another platform, for the reason that's mentioned here, this mayam. And I'm not a Sanskrit scholar, but the case of the term indicates, according to Jiva Goswami, it's for the pleasure of. It's for the pleasure of Krishna. Now, he's speaking not as the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the pleasure of Krishna. He's speaking as the son in, you know, an intimate family exchange where his father is Tata, daddy, you know, whatever language people may use in the world today. But so it's submissive and it's very respectful. And from my understanding, this word makaha has to do with, specifically, the term has to do with karmakanda rituals. It has to do with karmakanda, that my understanding is based upon this tussle that smarta Brahmins say, only if you're born in a Brahmana family and do the this and the that and the other and become a qualified person to offer ritualistic sacrifices can you do so. And the argument on the other side is, by Vaishnavas who take shelter of the holy name, they become eligible as Vaishnavas and thus qualified to do Makaha. So like there's a fundamental conception of what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. Or what is the position of one who takes shelter of Krishna even in the, you know, less than perfect stage? Can one perform rituals? Now, back to the ritual, the festival, the Makaha, the sacrifice that's being recommended. Krishna's recommending it. He's appealing. Makaha. The emphasis I'm trying to make here is it's not the essence. It's a ritual. And the ritual isn't the essence. It's submission to Krishna that's the essence. So it's right in the verse, which is beneficial for you. If it pleases you, please know it pleases me. And because I know that you want to please me, I'm letting you know it will please me. And that's this mayam term. And that's all Nanda Maharaj needs to hear. It's pleasing to Krishna, that's it. Because that's his platform. Now, there's some acharya discussion that goes something like this. Nanda Maharaj said, oh, very nice. Let's take half of the paraphernalia and do what you're suggesting. The other half of the paraphernalia will worship Indra. And Krishna wants, no, everything is these three. Go Brahmana and Govardhan Hill. And especially Govardhan Hill. Now, the cows and the Brahmanas are so dear to Krishna that in one sense Krishna holds them more dear than himself. At the same time, Govardhan Hill is Krishna himself. So that's what the commentary says, and especially Govardhan Hill. That's the Leela. And of course there's layers. Krishna wanting to curb the pride of Indra, because Krishna doesn't like pride in the heart of his devotees, on any platform of devotee, including the gopis, including Indra, including us, including anybody, everybody. Krishna doesn't like. So to curb the pride of Indra, he's performing this leela where the Indra Yajna is being stopped and this other festival and sacrifices being recommended. So it's just unpacking a little bit, meditating upon the pastime and meditating upon the kind of consciousness of the Brijbasis. Their consciousness is so absorbed in Krishna, they are unable to think of anything else. Even if they try to think of something else, they cannot think of something else. They cannot think of something else. They're totally absorbed. And it's the highest platform. Just end with this. There's... I've been spending a lot of time, most of you know, with the Dhruva Maharaj Leela. And a comment that Jiva Goswami makes in the last of the Sandarbhas, Preeti Sandarbha, is a compare-contrast kind of comment. That is, when Vishnu comes before Dhruva, after Dhruva was absorbed in his trance of meditation upon Vishnu, and he saw, as he was instructed by Narada, he saw Vishnu standing on a whirl of a lotus within his heart, and He was in samadhi. He was in trance. And then suddenly that darshan of Vishnu within his heart, poof. And he was startled. And he opened his eyes when he was startled and saw Vishnu standing before him. So Jiva Goswami describes, this is a stage of perfection, and the most perfect stage is the stage of the Brijbasis, where because of their absorption in Krishna, their mind is absorbed in Krishna. Even when Krishna is not before them, they see Krishna before them. There's no before and after. It's so that there isn't an explanation. It's just that's the statement. In other words, from a material perspective, one might say, gosh, how's that? If they're feeling separation and their mind is totally absorbed in feelings of separation and they see Krishna in front of them, why are they having feelings of separation from Krishna who's in front of them because of their absorption? It seemed like a very logical contradiction. But that's the nature, that's Jiva Goswami's comment in Priti Sandarbha. The super excellence of the love of the residents from Vrindavan is like that. Something like elsewhere it's described when the gopis, from feelings of separation, they're anticipating meeting, and then an arrangement for meeting comes. And even when they're meeting, their meeting is heightened by the feeling that soon they'll be separated from Krishna. The feeling of separation from Krishna is part of their feeling, whether they're separate from Krishna or with Krishna. It is an intensifier of loving feelings. So you better not become a lover of Krishna like the residents of Vrindavan, because you'll have to live with that. It's painful. I mean, people that have, they lose a family member. It happens. And sometimes it's gradual, and sometimes it's sudden, and sometimes. But when that feeling is someone is gone, it's a painful feeling. But that painful feeling is not the same as the painful feeling of the residents of Vrindavan, or, you know, when Lord Ramachandra was sent to the forest. His father died. And the others, who knows, after he left, what their feelings were. 14 years. And in those 14 years, who knows? Bharata, down to the day of the 14th year, passed. And when Lord Ramachandra hadn't returned, he was ready to give up his life. So that means for 14 years he was feeling those feelings. And then Ram returned. So then it's a happy feeling. But these are, you know, it's a subject matter that's based on the phenomenal experience that we're accustomed to. And now back to what the purport says, the modern training that we've all received, that is, everything that exists is the phenomenal and there isn't anything else. As the comment is saying, it's spoiling the whole human society. The higher realms and the soul and everything, and what to speak of the spiritual world. It's just driving people further and further and further and further from who they really are, and what real happiness is. And misery. Just a little sharing, and I'm going to end with this. I was asked by two devotees in China to write something about the message from a monk about what the current situation is in China with this virus and fear and death and, you know, everything that's going on. It's really delicate because you can't, God's got to stay in the box. But the people don't want to suffer, people don't want to die, people don't want to be put in a box where they can't, you know, there are some devotees that I know living in Wuhan, or at least, yeah, living in Wuhan, and someone was visiting mother and father to live in Wuhan when this thing happened. So they're like, they're in under house arrest. They can't go out for fear of the virus or for fear of reprimand from the government for going out. I don't know how they got their vegetables and, you know, they're going to the marketplace. Anyway, and now it's gripping the world. So we're so far away from who we really are. And buying into, you know, building the economy and making decisions based upon who can build the economy. Because we, you know, the modern world, exactly as the purport said, the modern world has bought into that which is destroying the finer sentiments of human society. What to speak of higher consciousness? What to speak of ending the cycle of birth and death? It's just driving people further and further away. So to come to the Srimad Bhagavatam, that this is the 10th canto, that preliminary to the 10th canto is all kinds of understanding that helps us get a picture of higher reality, and then we enter into the higher reality of the residence of Vrindavan. It's a lifetime sojourn, and we're going against the current, and trying to propagate that which is against the current. Very special opportunity that we have, and like not easy, but very special opportunity that we have, and based upon this sound vibration that purifies to the highest degree. That's the gift we've been given. Okay, so end there and see if there's some comments or questions.
Maharaj, we are talking about Varnashrama Dharma.
Varnashrama Dharma.
Yeah. And Varnashrama Dharma is based on the psychophysical nature of the jiva. So I was thinking that if such people take to Krishna consciousness, does the psychophysical nature still be there? Are they serving, using the psychophysical nature, or... You know, they're just, it's like how you were explaining that the secondary, like following Varnashrama Dharma assists in the primary purpose of reaching the higher goal. So, I don't know if my question was clear, but...
I, I kind of get the drift, but I don't really know what's the point of the question, the needle.
So
a point.
If you want to ask.
Is it true that devotees don't require to practice Dharma?
No.
No, that's not what I want.
What it looks like, that's the mystery.
Like my question is mostly that, does the psychophysical nature change when one takes to Krishna consciousness? Because Varnashrama Dharma is more like we are using our psychophysical nature to do things.
Using your psychophysical nature to do to please Krishna. That's your point?
Yeah.
It's a social structure for persons that aren't perfect, and even persons that are perfect, they observe it. It's a social structure given by Krishna. So what do you do with something that's given by Krishna? You honor it. But what does it look like? Mm. That's the puzzle. And how to get there? That's, you know, another part of the puzzle. So, that's not touching on your question, does it? Is it or is it not?
Yeah, it is helpful. More so specifically, I think I'm asking the same thing over again, but it's mostly that, does the psychophysical nature change when one becomes a devotee?
Does psychophysical nature change when you engage in Varnashram?
When one becomes a devotee.
When one becomes a devotee.
Yes.
What do you think?
I think yes, but I'm not sure.
My understanding is this, yes, guna and karma become, there's modification. There's modification that happens on the soul platform, manifests through the subtle covering platform, manifests through the gross covering platform. So, psychophysical nature changes. Now there are some essential things that may not suddenly or drastically change. That, you know, as long as we're not in the perfect stage, there's a psychophysical nature that accompanies us. So it's great, gradual. And there's some very fundamental psychophysical natures to each of us. But they change up to the point of perfection. And then that's freedom. But yes, but not completely until the stage of perfection. Does that help?
Yes. Okay. Thank you much.
Be over your left shoulder.
Guru Maharaj, when we start speaking of Varnashrama, I wonder, you mentioned that this is one of Prabhupada's instructions that we're not so clear about, that we don't know how to follow, yet it is Prabhupada's instructions, one of Prabhupada's instructions. So when I think of it in terms of, you know, how are we training the next generation of ISKCON devotees? Maybe we're choosing alternative ways of education.
Maybe what? Someone's voice.
So some of us might be choosing, let's say, alternative ways of education.
Alternative
ways of education and not, you know, the mainstream. Yet, we're clueless in terms of Varnashram. We're not training them in Varnashram. We're pretty much, you know, training them in the same mainstream occupations. So it just seems like it seems like a vision that's just so far away, and you know.
Yeah, but you got to start somewhere, right? Okay, so here's to keep it really simple, because this is goes on forever discussion. Um, There may be other models, but the model that I have seen that makes the most sense to me is the model that the devotees in Hungary have evolved. After very serious discussion, you're familiar with what I'm about to say, but because the seventh canto Bhagavatam, that's a major topic, and what Varnashram looked like during, you know, the age of Prahlad, you know, Satyayuga. What are the principles? So Narada describes some principles. So principles are characteristics of a civilized human being, because you have to be a civilized human being before you can do civilized activity. So there's qualities, and so that's their approach. At least that was, you know, like 2 years ago. I don't know where it's gone since then. Maybe you visited there, you know where it's gone since then. But that's the beginning. You know, character development, that's the principle of education. And then what's it going to look like in our modern age? It's not going to look, we can say what it's not. What is it going to look like? Well, let's find out by developing first the qualities. And like her question, you know, purification of consciousness, so we'll get more of an insight about what it's going to look like, because our consciousness is more elevated and purified. And then by reading the Bhaktivedanta purports, we'll get a deeper understanding of what it's going to look like. Not just Bhaktivedanta purports, but Prabhupada's discussion. Let's just take, you know, this other example. Another related example is the Temple of Vedic Planetarium. Prabhupada wanted it. Like Varnashram, Prabhupada wanted it. So Temple of Vedic Planetarium, gosh. And a lot of people that have a different perspective on what it is and what it's going to look like were involved. But that's part of the, you know, the nice word, exegesis. It's kind of how something evolves from a notion to something that's more than notional. It's like real. I'll give a little example. There's like so many, but a little example. I was recently, before I went, left the country, I was in Los Angeles. And the morning Bhagavatam class was Canto 2, Chapter 1, the Universal Form. After I left, Dhruta Karma gave a class on Canto 2, Chapter 1, the Universal Form. And someone sent me a link to the video, and now I'm taking that video, and with his permission, taking, it's a presentation he made for the TOVP support team for exhibits that are to go into the Temple of Vedic Planetarium. The Bhaktivedanta Institute had a gathering somewhere, I forget where, and he made this presentation that fifth canto Bhagavatam, all of the chapters that deal with the structure of the universe, is describing the universal form. That's Vedic cosmology. And then, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's gotten me really interested in something that's been a big mystery to me, even being familiar with Sariputta's writings and mysteries of the sacred universe and all of that. And then, so, then I took that essence, passed it on to Antar Dweep Prabhu, that's in charge, the person in charge of Temple of Vedic Planetarium, and asked him, you know, what do you think of this presentation? He said, spot on. So, the structure, Vedic cosmology is universal form. Now, is the universal form clear to you? Is the universal form clear to anybody in this room? It's a mystery. It's one of the mysteries. And so, their assignment is to build the temple of Vedic Planetarium and exhibits that help explain Canto 5, along with the planetarium itself. So, back to Varnashram. I don't think that, well, I'll say it positively. My experience is different persons who have very seriously dedicated themselves to explaining Fifth Canto Bhagavatam and Vedic cosmology will agree with one another about the model. So then we get into this, well, who's right? Because if this one's right, then that one can't be, it's got to be wrong. Because you can't have multiple rights, because they say different things. Then comes the next question, how do you read Prabhupada's books? Hermeneutics. You familiar with that term? Okay. She's a college graduate. She knows what hermeneutics means. How do you read the Bible? Because some people read it this way, some people read it. So how do you decide the proper way to read the Bible? How to read the proper way to read Prabhupada's writings? The Bhaktivedanta purports that illuminate Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita and the knowledge of the wisdom of disciplic succession. How do you read it? Because some people read this and some people read that. So there's a group of people. They've been working at it for 10 years. And it's evolving and getting refined as it gets, as it evolves. What is hermeneutics? How do you read Prabhupada's books? How do you properly understand this model of Vedic cosmology, that model of Vedic cosmology, and which ones do you leave aside and which ones just say there can be different models, that's okay. It takes a mature devotee to be able to go through that and say, these are the criterion for how you evaluate can something be accepted or not as a proper picture of Vedic cosmology or Varnashram or whatever subject you want to, the fall of the jiva. Or, take any other, female Diksha gurus. Take some topic that there are people on different sides of a topic. And, who's right? Because if this one's right, then that one can't be right. It's wrong. It's a process. Go back to your question, the models of education start at some very simple, point to launch into. And I'm suggesting these two things, sadhana bhakti that's very carefully performed, and I, at least for me, the model that the devotees in Hungary have agreed upon, become a civilized being. Not just that's what it's going to look like, but practice it, cultivate it. And only then will it become easier to understand this is what it's going to look like. Otherwise, you're looking at models through lenses that are dirty or filtered or influenced by the modes, and that can't be it or that can't be it. Not an easy process. Prabhupada didn't give so much of an explanation, this is what it's going to look like. He just gave us, I want it. Left something for us to do. Anyone else? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you. You were mentioning Krishna does not like pride in any of his devotees or anyone in general.
You're going to have to do some relay. Go ahead, keep going. Yeah, but he also starts to go fast and I can't unpack what he's saying. So, but keep going.
When you also mentioned the Madhyama Adhikaris, we should discriminate that qualification of devotee discriminates. The immediately thing that came to mind is in Anchalila chapter 5, Lord Chaitanya is described in the beginning of the first verse as a physician. Now, we all have our conceptions of who can help us, a physician. We go to the doctor, but we see that when we go to the doctor may tell us, I cannot help you. You need your proper blood type. So we see in so many pastimes, in this particular chapter, Pradyumna Mishra went to Lord Chaitanya. He says, can you help me? Lord Chaitanya says, I cannot help you. Go to Ramananda Roy. Same with Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni asks Lord Vishnu, can you help me? He says, no. Go to Ambarish Maharaj. And same with Prabhupada. Even though Prabhupada was obviously not proud, still Prabhupada asked his god brothers, can you help me? But who helped them? The hippies who were addicted to drugs. So my question is, can we expect Lord Krishna to can we expect Lord Krishna to not send us the help we think we need? Because that may not be the help that will decrease our ego, our egoistic pride. And so that's kind of my question. Can we expect that that Lord Krishna will send us help that will decrease our pride?
Punchline, you got it? Of course. Isn't that your experience? Okay. Well, sometimes. But Krishna is very kind. Sometimes it's gentle, sometimes it's through a friend, sometimes it's with a hammer. Krishna's helping us. And a lot depends on what we want. Like, you know, in the deepest place of our heart, what we want. Because Krishna won't interfere. But if you have some well-wisher that is praying to Krishna on your behalf, then that helps Krishna get involved in helping. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you.